Before we get into today's episode, I want to let you know about a free ebook for you to download today that you won't want to miss. It's called In Conversation with Jordan Peterson, Atheism, Christianity, and the Psychology of Belief. This special ebook was created from an unbelievable podcast with famed Canadian psychologist Jordan Peterson. And in it, you'll discover how to bring order to a chaotic world using the wisdom of the Bible. So download your free copy of In Conversation with Jordan Peterson by visiting premierinsight.org/resources. That's premierinsight.org/resources. This is a limited time offer, so make sure to do it today. That's premierinsight.org/resources. And now it's time for today's podcast.
Listening to Unbelievable with Justin Brierley.
Hello, welcome back to this week's Classic Replay. It's Justin here to introduce this week's show from the archive. Now, is there more to the beauty and meaning we find in music than atheism allows? David Robertson contends that the joy and meaning we experience in music is a pointer beyond itself to an ultimate source of joy and meaning in God. In this show, first broadcast in March 2011, he engaged with atheist musician Gordon Livesey, who contends that while we all experience emotions and meaning in music, it can ultimately be explained in scientific terms alone. And the show includes some musical excerpts too, some unusual ones. So find out more by listening. Thanks for tuning in. Don't forget you can find many more shows from the podcast archive of Unbelievable at our show page, premierchristianradio.com/unbelievable.
Well, welcome Gordon and David. David, thanks for coming back again this week after being grilled last week. And welcome Gordon to the show, who's
Hello.
No stranger either.
You've been indeed.
Been on a few times now.
That's right, yes.
One form or another. Well, for those who aren't familiar with who you are, Gordon, you are an atheist.
Indeed.
But rather than go into the backstory of that, I'll post up a couple of programmes that you've contributed to before if people are interested in hearing more about your story and where you come from. What I'm more interested in for the purpose of today's programme is obviously that you're a musician.
Indeed.
And you're a drummer.
Yes.
Aren't there lots of jokes about drummers in bands?
There are, yes. Like, for example, how do you get a drummer off your doorstep? And the answer is you pay him for the pizza. And things like that, yeah. There's lots of drummer jokes.
Yes. But more than that, you are, in a sense, a music producer as
yes,
well.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
You sort of do studio work, you help other people to record and things. So music has been a big part of your life for a long time?
The major part of my life, yes, going back into my memory as far back as I can remember, you know, back to the days of listening to Slade. I remember the original release of Merry Christmas Everybody by Slade. I actually bought that record first time round. And I used to, do the old tennis racket guitar. Playing along to my favourite singles of the 70s. And then when I... was old enough, my parents sent me for piano lessons, and I learned the piano for a while. But my passion had always been, for reasons which I can't explain, my passion had always been playing the drums. And when I was 12, I began drum lessons and have carried on since then. And along the way, I've picked up the ability to play the guitar exceptionally badly. So really, the order of preference for the instruments which I play is drums, piano and guitar, and as you quite rightly say, in addition to that, I run a small recording studio and do some production there.
Well, we'll certainly give that a good plug on the podcast for any budding musicians
in the
Surrey area who want to get along there to be recorded. But we tried to do this actually last year, but you weren't available for the date I suggested because you were very fancily flying off to Germany to receive an award for your music.
Tell
us very briefly about that.
Well, there's a major music retail outfit over in a place very near a German town of Bamberg. And this music retailer is called Thomann, and it's actually the biggest music retailer in Europe, and they have turnover in the hundreds of millions of euros. And for reasons best known to themselves, they decided to run a competition to write and record their Christmas song. And so somewhat whimsically, I thought, oh, I'll have a go at that. So I put together this sort of slightly tongue-in-cheek tribute to Dolly Parton. And got my friend Ben to play guitar on it for me. He's a much better guitarist than I am. And put it together and just sort of threw it out there.
Just as a kind of, oh, what the heck kind of thing.
Yes, absolutely right, yeah. So I just emailed it off and expected to hear nothing else. And next thing I know, I've won. And, you know, apart from the fantastic prize of £500 to spend in their shop, which was brilliant, They flew me out to Bamberg, and they showed me around this amazing, amazing music operation they've got there. And
let's hear a snippet of it. We don't have time to play the whole thing, but this is quite fun.
It just makes no sense to me. I'm searching around the Christmas tree, looking for some song that I can sing. Got no trumpet Gabriel, and I can't hear no jingle bell, but I'd rather break a sweat than break a string. And oh, Joanna's quiet now, this silence doesn't fit somehow. I'm trying my best to fill it, cause I'm full of Christmas feeling. Talking man to man, talking man to man, talking man to man.
There you go. Great fun. Obviously, a take on Dolly Parton's 9 to 5,
correct,
but done with a Christmas aspect to it, and obviously incorporating the company that you were the song for.
I think they liked that.
That probably helped, didn't it? But good fun. And obviously, you know, music is fun. But the thing about music is it brings so many emotions to us, doesn't it? I mean, I know very few people for whom music isn't a major emotional source. And in a sense, that's kind of where we're going on today's programme. Let me introduce our other guest today, who's David Robertson, joins us again, Free Church Minister in Scotland, author of The Dawkins Letters and director of SOLAS, the Centre for Public Christianity in Dundee in Scotland. David, you came to me with this as a possible suggestion, this title, Can Music Have Soul If You Don't Believe in the Soul? Now, we're not specifically talking about the soul, is it? Play on words, really. But what's your take then? Why do you think this is a fruitful area for sort of talking about whether God exists and whether that there is meaning to life beyond, if you like, the material universe we're in?
Well, it's back to believing in God and why we believe. And often in Christian discussion, you'll get arguments about truth and about goodness and, well, I would hope about love as well, but usually it's truth and goodness. I would argue that the concept of beauty is, for me, actually the greatest proof and ultimate reason for God. I don't want to get too philosophical to start with, but Plato argued that beauty is our object of desire and why we live and so on, and Aquinas argued that the beauty was an attribute of being, it was a gift from God. I think we live in a culture where people perceive beauty as being only in the eye of the beholder. And I think that creates chaos. I do think beauty is an objective value. Whether I can say what that is or understand it all, I very, very much doubt. But to me, the sense of beauty and the sense of wonder is a reflection of our sense of God. And I see that in art and in many other things, but I particularly do also see it in music.
And you are a music fan, aren't you?
I am totally useless at any form of music. In fact, the only instrument I can play is the Irish hand drum, the Brann. and I enjoy that. But for me, the iPhone is one of the greatest inventions in the history of the world, or iPod or something. I love just so many different kinds of music. It is the soundtrack of my life. I appreciate musicians. I think as a culture, we don't appreciate musicians nearly enough. I think that we should, I think music should be taught a lot more. And I think that people just don't realize how significant it is. I think we've made music cheap in a lot of sense. And I just think it's really, really, really important. And it does change. I mean, And you learn to appreciate different things. I remember once my son, who was, and still is actually, very much a metal fan, and he came to me one day with a Metallica album, and I said, yeah, right, son, forget it, you know. And he said, no, Dad, these are brilliant musicians. And I, of course, I was prejudiced, and I said, no way.
And just a lot of noise.
Yeah, I listened to it, and I've never heard anything. I mean, the drumming, the guitar work, and so on. And they were playing with the San Francisco Symphony Orchestra.
Mm.
It's just a phenomenal thing. And I just realized, wow, there's, you know, so many different styles of music, and all of it is reflective of something.
Okay, well, that's interesting, and that's an interesting place to take it to. We're going to hear some music during the course of today's programme. Both David and Gordon have submitted a few tracks that we could use sort of for illustrative purposes today, and be interesting to get your reflections on those and what they say to you, and why, David, you would take this as having some kind of more ultimate purpose or meaning to it, and where you see the kind of emotion and the response that people have to music of various kinds, where you see that emanating from, Gordon, yourself. You're listening to Unbelievable, and we're talking about, can music have soul if you don't believe in the soul? Essentially, the question is, you know, does music and its appreciation only make sense in the light of a God who, if you like, is the definition of beauty and reason and experience and everything else? So if you want to email me in response to anything you hear on the programme today, do get in touch. That's unbelievable@premier.org.uk. You can phone 08456 52 52 52 and select option 8 if you'd like to leave me a voicemail message, and I can play that out on a future edition of the programme. And don't forget our website, which has got tons of features, interviews, video features, and of course the vast back catalogue of Unbelievable programmes to listen to and download. premier.org.uk/unbelievable, and of course details on the conference coming up in May, Saturday the 14th of May, the Unbelievable Truth Conference. Do check that out if you want to book in. premier.org.uk/unbelievable.
Unbelievable with Justin Brierley.
Well, before we get into some more discussion, let's play out a brief snippet. And this, you certainly have an eclectic range of tastes, David. I'm going to play out something you selected, which is Beethoven's Pastoral Symphony, the Sixth. And here's just a snippet of that. Well, an absolutely, you know, universally renowned track in a sense. Not that I'm a classical expert by any means, but even I know that one and others of his best hits, as it were, of Beethoven. But okay, David, maybe start us off here, and we'll have Gordon respond. Why did you want to have that piece played out?
Well, actually, I'm glad that's the piece that we've gone with first, because this goes back to my university days. I was in Pollock Halls of Residence in Edinburgh, and I'd ordered Led Zepp. Mail order, and these were days when we had, you know, round things that were records, and we played them on turntables, and it arrived, and I said, brilliant, and I put it on from the Britannia Music Club, as it was then. I don't know if it still exists. And I put it on, and I was waiting for the guitar, and Beethoven's Sixth came on, and I was so disappointed. I wasn't into classical music at all, but I lay on my bed anyway and thought, I'll just listen to it. And as I was listening to it, I thought, this is like a storm, and this is like being out in the fields, and this. And then I read the sleeve notes, and I was so stunned that everything I felt was what it was about. And you know, they talk about the language of music. I do think, and I'd be interested to hear, you know, the different opinions on this. But I do think music does communicate. I think there is a language involved. John Calvin said that of all the gifts God has given us, music is the most powerful, which doesn't usually fit with the Calvinist image. But that piece of music, for me, evokes words, feelings, memories, and so on. And I think really good music communicates. That's really what I'm trying to say.
Okay. Gordon, you're a classical person particularly, or is it not so much your thing?
Not so much, no. Obviously, I know quite a few of Beethoven's works, and Handel and Mozart and Tchaikovsky. I know I'd be able to recognise quite a few of their works, probably because I've ended up playing quite a few of them, as well as playing drum kit. I also get roped into playing orchestral percussion, like timpani, from time to time, and I've ended up playing with orchestras. Some very, very well-known classical pieces, and as a consequence, I get to know them. Mm. Some of them I do genuinely love. Some of them, you know, I find it passes me by, and I just sort of think, no, this is it's not quite my cup of tea.
But in a sense, when you do respond to a piece of music and it evokes something in you, what do you think you are responding to in the music?
Yeah, interesting, and this is at least in part why I've picked two of my favourite tunes to feature in this programme today. Of course, it's sound is simply the movement of air; it's just air molecules vibrating, but that causes sensors in your ears, the little cilia, the sort of hairs which are inside your ears. It causes those to vibrate and send signals to your brain, which your brain then interprets, of course, as sound. Now, what I'm responding to, of course, is that sound, that movement of air. But in addition, my thoughts are that the combinations of those nervous reactions can create, within your brain, within your psyche, and within your feelings, it can create certain emotions, rather like, for example, with, say, something like stroking the skin, it might cause your toes to curl or something like that. You know, it produces a reaction which it possibly wasn't intended to produce, but it produces it nonetheless. And sometimes those reactions which I have to music are very, very pleasant indeed. You know, they can create feelings almost of ecstasy, or they can bring me to tears, or they could make me laugh. Mm. All sorts of emotions can be created simply by my response to what is basically just the vibration of air.
And is that really what you ultimately kind of it boils down to in a very reductionist sense? It is, that's all there is there, and it's just your neurophysiological reaction to those things producing a certain emotion. And that's the bottom line.
Yes, but of course, as you'd expect, you know, there's more to it than that. Because, of course, the reactions and the emotions that I feel are not without their own value. And it's not as if when I listen to this piece of music and experience a certain feeling, I don't sort of think, oh, there it was. Well, that was quite nice. Right, on to the next thing. You know, I can actually immerse myself in it and feel, you know, joy or sadness, well, or whatever.
Quick response, David, and then we will hear Gordon's first piece, which is quite different to Beethoven, but we'll...
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad you said there was more to it than that, because when you said it's just the vibrations and so on, I mean, of course, I fully accept the physical explanation. And I would accept the physiological explanation as well. My view is, of course, that things go even deeper than that, that there is a spiritual side. I think you find someone like King Solomon in Ecclesiastes, for example, trying. He had everything. He had a harem, he had orchestras, he had everything. And he said, look, it ended up all being meaningless. Although you could immerse yourself in it, it's still meaningless if it's just, if you can reduce it all to chemical reactions and combinations of experiences and so on. So what I'm suggesting is that the feeling that we have as we listen to music is what you have said, but it's a pointer to something deeper and more profound even. That's where I'm going.
Well, for example, if I were to suffer a personal injury, you know, if I were to cut myself with a knife or something like that, then the nerves in my skin and in my body are sort of screaming at me and producing a reaction in my brain. Yeah. But I wouldn't experience that reaction and say, oh, this is just meaningless because it's just my nerves and my neurons and my brain reacting to this thing. It's not meaningless at all. It can have very profound meaning. My thought is that God has not given us the experience, the possibility to experience pleasure any more than he's given us the necessity to experience pain.
Well, I would say he's given both of those. In fact, when you're talking about the pain that you feel from that, in one sense, it is meaningless, because what does it matter if you're just a bunch of chemicals? You're going to die anyway. I mean, just overcome the pain by taking some heroin or something. You know, what's the...
Well, I do have a survival instinct. I'm not going to just bleed to death, you know.
Yes, but I mean, why... I mean, at some point, if somebody comes, and this happens often, I mean, Jean-Paul Sartre on his deathbed was basically saying, if people accept my philosophy, there is no point. Suicide is painless. It brings on many changes. You know, I mean, if you come to the conclusion that life is meaningless other than survival instinct... That's why I'm arguing about music. I think music tells us there is more than a survival instinct.
Let's hear another track, and somewhat from the sublime to the ridiculous, though. not that it is ridiculous.
I don't know. Dolly Parton was great,
Here's Gordon's first selection, which is It's Raining Men, Yes, You Heard Me Right, by The Weather Girls. Yes, there you go. The Weather Girls, possibly played for the first time ever on Premier Christian Radio. But great fun, nonetheless. Gordon, so tell me, okay, the reason for that choice of music.
Absolutely.
Why did you want to play that?
Okay, that song was in the charts and being played a lot on the radio when I was much, much younger. And although it wasn't the first song which I ever had a physical reaction to, you know, a reaction that I can actively remember... interestingly enough, the first song that ever happened to me on was by Led Zeppelin, who David mentioned earlier. It was a song called Thank You, which was on Led Zeppelin 2. But that song, It's Raining Men, was the first one that ever gave me this particular reaction, which was, for reasons which I can't explain, it made me cry. And I'll tell you exactly which line it was. It was the line that we've just heard, where the singers sing tonight for the first time, just about 10:30. And I would play that line over and over again, and it would send shudders through me, and it would fill my tear ducts. And I was thinking to myself, what in the world is going on here? I can't explain it, and yet it's very, very real. And it couldn't have been a fluke. It couldn't have been something that I thought about coincidentally while I was listening to that song, because I would do it again and again. Mm. And even today, it still just gives me those little tingles when I listen to that line. And... This is in part why I spend a lot of time thinking about why I react to music and how I react to music. And it sort of led me to these conclusions which I outlined briefly earlier on, which, you know, would be that certain stimuli produce certain reactions, and sometimes they could even be the reactions that they're not designed to produce. So,
yeah, I mean, because in that sense, then, what you're saying sounds to me like is it's about the way... certain chords and musical things interact, and to be honest, they could be saying whatever they liked. It's actually the music, not the words or the sort of meaning behind it, that is actually creating a response, a physical response in some way.
Quite right. I mean, I find the actual lyric of It's Raining Men, I find it, you know, rather preposterous, and I find it joyous. I find it absolutely joyous. I think it's great fun, but I can't see that the lyricist was particularly going for any deep emotional reaction.
Right. What's your response here, David?
I'm sorry. I'm smiling because it was my wife's 50th birthday party last week. And as part of that party, we did Just Dance 2, and I found myself dancing along to It's Raining Men. So, for middle-aged men in a free church, it really was... maybe I shouldn't... Maybe you better not broadcast this a bit. Yeah, I mean, again, what I'm fascinated by what you're saying is what causes our reactions, and I think you're right. I think... There's a vast combination of things. Surely memory, for example, I will hear a certain song and it reminds me of something. It's funny, you listen to a song that you heard 20 years ago, you haven't heard for 20 years, you know all the words. It's stored deep in your mind, in your subconscious. So I think memory is huge. I do think rhythm, beat, music, tone and so on, again, that's part of the physical aspect of it. I do think the words are important, though, in this, that, this is a Christian radio station, it will play Christian music and so on, and I discuss this quite a lot about whether there's such a thing as Christian music. You know, is there a Christian building or a Christian potato or Christian music? That's a big question. And I find myself, I come on the tube here and wonderfully for London, there's poetry on the tube.
Mm.
And I was stunned by a piece of Keats poetry that was there that talked about this very subject, about in the darkness and disappointments of our lives, beauty shines through. And I think that that is what is happening, that I think the physical, I'm not decrying the physical aspect, to me the physical aspect, the emotional aspect, the memory, the sensory and so on, it is all pointing us towards beauty. But I think it's pointing. It's well, not beauty itself.
Okay, well, I'm sure Gordon will want to respond to that, and we're going to take a quick break here. We'll come back with some more examples of music as well as we continue to talk and maybe get into some of the sort of meat of this of, well, why would David believe that music is ultimately a pointer to something beyond itself? And why Gordon doesn't feel that that's a necessary leap to make. You're listening to Unbelievable, the programme that brings Christians and non-Christians together. My Christian on the programme today is David Robertson, author of the Dawkins Letters. And the atheist joining me in the studio today and musician is Gordon Livesey. And we're hearing their views on the subject we're talking about today. Can music have soul if you don't believe in the soul? Join us again in a couple of minutes' time. Now, back into today's show, we're asking, can music have soul if you don't believe in the soul? This next song is David Robertson's choice.
Yeah, I see your flag on the marble arch. But listen, love, love is not some kind of victory march. No, it's a cold and it's ever broken. Hallelujah. Hallelujah, 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 hallelujah.
A classic song, Hallelujah, by Leonard Cohen. I first... came into the circumspect of that song by Jeff Buckley, who did a version of it, the guitarist.
Well, it was
subsequently featured on Shrek, but that was a song that when I first heard it by Jeff Buckley, just sent shivers down my spine. And obviously, it's been done a bit to death with the X Factor making it a big deal and all that. But okay, David, quickly, why that selection and how does it feed into our discussion today?
Okay, it actually wasn't because of the word hallelujah and trying to claim it as a Christian song, because I think Christians do that far too quickly. It's that combination of music and the power of words, not just the meaning of the actual words and grammatical sequence, but the tone and... Leonard Cohen is primarily a poet, not a musician, but he's a fantastic musician. And I guess my main point with that one was I went to Edinburgh Castle, best concert I've ever seen, Leonard Cohen in Edinburgh Castle last year. And I said to my sister, who at the time wasn't a Christian, I said, you know, I don't get how people here get these songs, because 50% of the lyrics are about sex and 50% are about the Bible, and basically usually combined. And I thought, unless these people are biblically literate, I said, I'm okay as a Christian because I know a wee bit about sex, you know. What do they know about the Bible? And it just struck me how Cohen, how you get all this mixture involved, and also incredibly powerful and incredibly beautiful. And sometimes I'm thinking, do you really know what you're singing? And at one point he talks about, here's the meaning of life. And then he began the song, which went da-do-dum-dum, da-dum-dum-dum. And I just thought, very clever, you know, because he was meant to be a Buddhist and then he got ripped off by, I mean, hence the concert tour and things. So it was just really that combination of words, music, poetry, and again, the way that that moves you emotionally.
But, and perhaps this is what Gordon's going to say, but isn't your emotional response a very subjective one? In terms of, you know, you may say, this just can't just be a case of neurons firing and giving me a nice kind of physiological feeling. It's got to be more than that if it's going to mean anything. Isn't that just a hope?
It is a desire. Yes, it's very subjective. But I don't offset subjective and objective as though they're opposites of one another. In other words, it's a subjectivity that comes from somewhere based on something. There were people at that concert, for example, who were, you know, in their 40s and so on and trying to relive their youth. And anyway, it's cool to be into Cohen, you know, that kind of stuff. I just liked him. But you could see that there was that going on. There were people remembering experiences that they had and so on. For me, it was just a little bit of that. But again, I actually sat in a Leonard Cohen concert and prayed and said, Lord, thank you for this music. I wish that people could see the beauty that behind, and I prayed for Leonard Cohen because he said himself that he was searching, you know, and his songs evoke that. For me, the very best of music is not one music that comes and gives you answers, the kind of Disneyfication of music. It's songs that ask questions. And that's why, for me, the best music that I know of, modern music, is rock music or actually rap. You know, but that's another. But that may be very subjective. Yeah. But yeah,
I mean, is that what you do see David's response to as a purely subjective phenomena? And
absolutely, I'm not trying to diminish David's experience of listening to music, be it Leonard Cohen or Beethoven or whatever he chooses. But I don't. And whilst I appreciate that the reactions that David has can be very profound, I don't regard those reactions as in any way more valid or more powerful than a non-Christian who possibly could also experience the same.
Or crying at the Weather Girls lyric. I mean, it's on the same par, if you like.
Indeed.
It is about the physiological response you're
quite,
having at
quite
that
right
moment.
yes and I'm really charmed by the fact that music can do that. I do appreciate that other things that David mentions can do it for some people, for example poetry or a great work of art. I mean, for me, say another thing which could move me almost to tears would be beautiful scenery, you know, wonderful snow-capped mountains and things like that. I can just sit and stare at them and wonder at them.
But that's my point. I mean, exactly, I agree with that. The beautiful scene, by the way, watching Barcelona, for me, that is makes football the beautiful game, as they call it. I better not say I'm in London. I was going to say watching Arsenal have recently encouraged me that. Watching Arsenal 15 years ago made me think this is not. But my point is not that a Christian can appreciate this and a non-Christian can't. My point is that like food, like sex, like beautiful scenery, both these are God's gifts to both Christians and non-Christians. There's all. So it's not that you perceive it, you have a better sense of it if you're a Christian, though that would be an interesting one to follow. But I'm coming back to this thing about it being a pointer, and it's a pointer to what? At the end of the day, you're saying it's actually a pointer to nothing. It's just how you physiologically respond.
No, I'm not saying it's a pointer to nothing. I'm saying it is a pointer to beauty. It's a pointer to potentially marvellous experience.
Okay, but you've just used a word, beauty.
Yes,
but on an atheist worldview, there is nothing objectively out there beautiful. All we have are certain patterns, and presumably the best explanation we can give of why we find something beautiful is some kind of evolutionary explanation. That would be why people said, you know, the hourglass figure is seen as a beautiful shape for a woman. It's got some evolutionary sort of feature to it. But does that really explain beauty?
No, it doesn't. I think that it's much more complex than that. There's no one single explanation for it. a beautiful mountain vista is not the same as listening to the Weather Girls. Yet both things for me are beautiful, but they might be perceived by me as being beautiful for different reasons.
Yeah.
And for example, one thing which I might be aware of as I look at some stunning mountain scenery is the fact that there are things greater than me out there, and I mean both physically greater and greater in terms of power. For example, as I look at a mountain range, I'm made acutely aware of the power of the movement of the Earth's crust and so on. They can push up these mountain ranges.
People have been being awed by mountains well before we discovered plate tectonics, haven't they? I mean, there's something, it almost strikes me as inherent in the beauty of a scene like that, that I don't know. What are you responding to then when you see a beautiful mountain sunset or whatever?
Well, the same as Gordon, and that again, when I tried desperately hard to be an atheist, and boy did I try, because it would have been very convenient for me. It was the mountains that were the problem. I grew up in the Scottish Highlands, and it was the stunning beauty, which you said there's something greater than you out there. Now, I think actually that puts it beautifully. In one of the Psalms, Psalm 19, and also in the Book of Romans, it talks about how the heavens declare God's glory. And in Romans, it talks about how the created order, if you like, proclaims the majesty and the eternity and the power of God. And that, for me, the stars, the mountains, all those things do that. And that's where the music comes in, because they are a response.
If beauty is simply, as it were, in the eye of the beholder and something that is just a subjective emotional response, then why do we value it in a way that sometimes seems to go beyond that? I'm thinking of, you know, if there was a masterpiece hanging on a wall, but for circumstances, you know, beyond our control, no one's ever going to be able to see it again. Okay.
Yeah.
Does it then make no difference whether someone slashes that masterpiece? It's like, you know, is that literally, well, no one's going to see it. No one's going to be having a response to it. Or is it because there's something beautiful there, it would be somehow wrong? There is something objective about beauty, if we are saying that, isn't there?
Yeah, there is, because, I mean, last night I was down here with my daughters and my wife, and we, you know, Westminster Abbey and the Houses of Parliament, they are beautiful buildings. You know, now you could have those buildings entirely functional, and probably more functional, without being beautiful. I don't accept that beauty is just something that is entirely in the eye of the beholder. I think when you end up with that, you then end up with a culture where someone places a cow in, you know, thalidomide, whatever, and people pay £10 million for it because, wow, isn't that radical? I mean, that's Emperor's New Clothes stuff. That's not, to me, that is not what we're looking at in terms of beauty. When you take away the objectivity of beauty, you know, the Weather Girls is fine. I would bring you to tears if I sang it, but not for the same reasons, because it would not be beautiful. I mean, you can have different tastes in terms of music, but I'm sorry, me scraping a balloon and screeching out a song, it might be an expression of something, but whatever it is, it's not an expression of beauty, except anti-beauty.
There's something else then which is brought into play, which is, what about ugly music?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. And what about music which, for example, promotes violence? Mm.
I think one of the greatest crimes, one of the greatest sins in the world, is what people might call muzak. You know, you go into, I hate the manipulation in supermarkets where they play certain types of music to try and get you to buy. Mm. The manipulation and everything. I think that's a misuse of music. The violence thing, yeah, I don't know. I mean, certain music, metal music I'd listen to, does it make me want to commit violence? Probably not.
No, there are other things, though. I mean, I know that certain records have been banned before. I remember there was a famous one called Cop Killer, which, yeah, I think was when George Bush Sr. was, yeah, the president of the US.
Yeah.
And that was actually banned in the United States because it was promoting the murder of on-duty policemen.
But to me, that's in a sense like the use of words. It's like books. It's like art. You can use it for good or for evil.
But would you find a song like that, or I hesitate to call it a song, would you find a piece of music like that ugly?
Yes.
You would, yes. So would I. Well, so,
but again, is that kind of the same point that David's making, that there is a kind of standard, if you like, then, that not everything conforms to a standard? And if there is some standard of beauty, if for whatever reason drumming your drums out of time with the music sounds ugly, whereas drumming it in time with the music, Gordon, sounds as it's meant to be, does that mean there is a meant to be in terms of beauty that goes beyond our subjective experience, that says there's some objective standard of beauty that points beyond the song.
Possibly not an objective standard, but maybe an accepted standard. There's all sorts of experimental music which goes on, whereby composers, for example, like John Cage, would bring together a piece called, is it Concerto for Prepared Piano? And I believe that a prepared piano is a piano which has had all sorts of objects placed on as strings, and I think you thump it with a hammer or something. That to my mind is music which steps outside the accepted norms, if you like, of beauty. And then taken to extremes in a slightly different direction, you do end up with things like rap music, you know, promoting violence and promoting murder. But I don't think that's done experimentally. I think that's done for different socio-political reasons and so on.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think Cage, for example, is interesting that you can have, you know, your 3.5 minutes of silence, which I think a great way of selling. It's a great way of selling a record. I could do that, you know. But, I mean, to me, that this all ties in with the art and so on. You know, it's a can of baked beans in the middle of a room art. Yeah, you really want to. You did say what is accepted. I think as a Christian, we're much more radical because we're saying, actually, no, there is objective beauty. I like Roger Scruton. I've got a quote from here. He says, "Beauty is a real and universal value, one anchored in our rational nature." Now, a lot of my atheist friends would accept that. I would argue, of course, our rational nature is one that's given us from God. So I'm still pushing it back along those lines, and it is a pointer. It still remains a pointer to that.
But before we go any further, I want to get a little bit more music in because time is running away. So let me just again reiterate, if you want to get in touch, do feel free to email. Perhaps you've got music that has moved you. Why does it move you, I wonder? Does it point beyond itself, as David suggests, to a greater beauty? Do get in touch and I'd like to hear from you. Perhaps you agree with Gordon's point of view. Gordon, our atheist on the programme today. Do email me, unbelievable@premier.org.uk. Don't forget our website available as well if you want to listen back to this and find out more about the programme. premier.org.uk/unbelievable.
Unbelievable with Justin Brierley.
Okay, let's play another song. This one's been selected by our atheist guest today, Gordon. Again, you've picked a song which I really love. I bought the Sixpence None the Richer album when it came out. So, briefly, Gordon, why that song? What does that say to you?
That song, again, for a while when I first heard it, had provoked a similar reaction in me to It's Raining Men. It did fill the tear ducts and so on, but in a slightly different way. And I think that what I experienced in that was a song of sort of unbridled joy. It's such a joyous and happy song, and it's celebratory, and I find one particular line in it, or a couple of lines, which is strike up the band and let the fireflies dance, the silver moon is sparkling. I just find that a thing of beauty. Mm-hmm. And again, if I sit and think about it long enough, I will feel the tear duct swell, and it really gets to me. It just gets right under my skin, and it just, sort of gently prods the most sensitive part of my personality.
What fascinates me about this choice of song is that, I don't know if you are aware of it, but they're a Christian band, and they are, all their songs have a spiritual content of some kind, and so that was partially why I liked the song, because of the other stuff on the album, you know, was very spiritual, and indeed the actual name of the band, Sixpence None the Richer, is a direct quote from C.S. Lewis, the Christian thinker. Now, does that stuff make any difference, do you think, to this, or is that sort of just by the by?
I was aware that they were a Christian band. I didn't know about the C.S. Lewis quote, though. That's very interesting. You learn something new every day, don't you? The fact that they are Christian in their thinking doesn't alter the way I would think about their music. As another example, I absolutely love Hark the Herald Angels Sing by Mendelssohn. I think that is an absolutely glorious piece of music. And, of course, you know, I've sung it many times, you know, right back from the days when I was at school. And since then, I've been out carol singing. And I just find that particular piece of music wonderful and stirring and emotionally active, if you like, in the way I think about music. The fact that it's Christian is, to my mind, doesn't alter in any way my appreciation of the music.
Your response, David, I mean, this expression of feeling just pure joy, you know, expressed in that music, what's your response to the song?
Oh, I totally identify with it. I didn't know that they were Christian until fairly recently, and I didn't care. That's not, for me, what was an issue. And I think once you start labelling bands as, you know, what's an atheist band or, a Christian band or so on, you can, what does that mean? I think the actual music and the imagery and so on, I accept fully the joy. I mean, the line that Gordon just quoted is just fantastic poetry. To me, it just reminds me of Song of Solomon. I'm going back again to the, what does it point to? It's about human love and, erotic love. And the Bible celebrates that in the Song of Solomon, and yet says it's not the end, there is something more. And I think that's, again, when we're coming in with the music, with sex, with food and drink, with everything, we're saying this is great, but it's not the absolute, it's not the end.
I mean, if I might sort of pursue the C.S. Lewis connection a bit, the Sixpence None the Richer comes from his book Mere Christianity, and there's this story he tells of a little boy asks his father if he can get a sixpence so he can go and get a gift for his father. And the father sort of gladly accepts the gift, very happy with it, but also realises he's not any richer for the transaction. And Lewis compares that to his belief that God's given us gifts that we possess to serve him with. But we do it humbly, realising that he gave us the gifts in the first place. He's sixpence none the richer for us serving him, but it brings him joy nonetheless. And just interestingly that you're talking about joy, C.S. Lewis, of course, wrote a book called Surprised by Joy, and he had this idea that he, as an atheist, he kept encountering this concept of joy around corners when he you know, turned a corner and saw a beautiful scene. Something inside him leapt and said, that's joy. And it was there for a moment, and then as soon as he thought about it, it was gone. He couldn't kind of analyse it. And what he said was when he became a Christian, he saw what that joy was all about, was pointing to. It didn't kind of give him the analysis of joy, but it said there's actually something out there beyond this kind of material universe, which is what that joy is a response to and is a kind of a taste of, if you like, of some kind of ultimate meaning and manifestation of joy.
Well, that's fair enough, and certainly I've experienced joy. I don't find it necessarily fleeting or transient. I can immerse myself in it, you know, with a fantastic album and a pair of headphones and a comfy sofa. You know, I can experience ongoing joy. But it does ask the question, okay then, so supposing you were to turn a corner and see a scene of absolutely impossible ugliness, you know, I don't know, a street brawl or a murder or drug dealing or something truly, you know, heinous like that, what does that point to? I dare say that some people would say, ah, that points to the work of Satan. So at which point I would say, right, so you're hiving off all the good stuff and giving that to God, and then all the bad stuff and giving it to Satan, and then God is therefore absolved from giving us these other things, which might be, you know, ugly music or ugly behaviour by people or you know, terrible natural disasters and things like that. I would sort of say you can't really have one without the other. Much as I am very disappointed by, you know, things of ugliness which I see and things which I find distasteful or whatever, I will have to set that against all the joy that I can find in life from not only music but other things, you know, things which I see or the behaviour of people towards me. For example, if somebody were to borrow some money from me to buy me a present, in one sense, I would be richer because I've had somebody, I've been in somebody else's thoughts. If somebody has seen something in a shop and thought to themselves, oh, I know who'd like that, but they haven't got enough money to buy it, so they borrow it from me to give it to me. I am richer in a sense because I've had the experience of receiving the gift.
Can I say to that, thank you. You've just answered the whole question of theodicy in one succinct statement. You can't have one without the other, which is exactly the Christian position. The view that you've presented of God gets all the credit, the devil gets all the blame, in that sense, is a caricature, a very simplistic view of the whole aspect. I think joy, I mean, again, tied in with music, the best music comes out of the deepest joy or the deepest pain. Absolutely. You know, that's some of the stuff that evokes. It's not all, you know, happy-clappy and so on. You look at the Psalms, for example, there's some intense agony there, but it's extraordinarily beautiful. You watch Schindler's List, and the music for it is quite stunning. Same with Gladiator, you know, the soundtrack with Gladiator. The ugliness side of it, I think that you're right. If we are to experience real joy, then there has to be ugliness. There has to be the opposite. If we experience real beauty, there has to be the opposite. And I would argue that although you say the joy you experience is not fleeting, actually it is, because the couch is soft only for so long. The morning will come. And that's the whole point about being a Christian. There's this prospect of eternal joy being offered through Jesus Christ. I mean, how this works out practically, I have a young man, I'll not name him because he's in prison, but he became a Christian recently and then went to prison, not for being a Christian, but for crimes committed before that. And he was actually in prison when he became a Christian. And he told me, and I thought this was highly amusing, that he didn't know what had happened to him, but he felt something within. One of my friends was talking to him and said, "That is what we call joy." And he said, "Wow," he says, "it's really powerful," he said, "because they drug tested me for it." He was so happy in prison that they thought he must have nicked some speed in or something. And so they actually drug tested him because of the joy that he felt. I would say that everything in this world is some attempt after joy and beauty. You can't have it without the pain and the ugliness. But the absolute sense of it is found through God and Jesus. That's how I would argue it.
I view that as a simple assertion without foundation. You say you can't have the beauty without the ugliness. I might say, why not? Governments spend money on promoting what they might consider to be beauty, you know, with grants to artistic projects, you know, the Royal Opera House and so on. Whether an opera is beautiful is another debatable point, but... and they also spend huge amounts of money in trying to eradicate ugliness from our society. You know, they catch the drug dealers and put them in prison, and they catch the murderers, or they try to, and
doesn't
put
work.
Them in prison.
That's the point, though.
But I don't see it as being anything more than a simple assertion that you can't have one without the other. Why can't you have one without the other?
Well, you basically said it. You know, that was your point, and which is what I'm agreeing with, that you've always got these two things together. And your point about government is really, really important, because government cannot buy joy, and it cannot stop sin, if you like. It cannot stop ugliness. It just can't. In fact, governments tend to be great producers of ugliness, and they decide. I mean, that's, again, for me, there's an Italian proverb: if you leave God out of the, he who leaves God out of the equation doesn't know how to count. And my argument would be that, for example, let's go back to my friend who's in prison, because he is a drug addict and because he did steal cars and he's known as a car thief and so on. Government have spent hundreds of thousands of pounds keeping him in and out of prison over the past 20 years. Because he finds, why does he take those drugs? Why does he do it? Because he's no joy and no beauty in his life. It's just ugliness, the housing estate, everything around. I'm not saying he's completely blameless. I don't believe that. But I believe circumstances are big. Then he finds Christ, and there's a joy and a beauty enters into his life, and he thinks, "Why? I don't need this anymore. I'm going to get this sorted. I'm going to do this." No government intervention can ever do that.
We are going to take a quick break, yeah, and then we'll have a chance for some final thoughts from Gordon and David. Different kind of show today. Musical extracts sort of helping us to think about the subject we've been looking at today. Can music have soul if you don't believe in the soul? Is there something beyond just the music, beyond just this world that beauty, art, music points towards? Fascinating discussion thus far, and we're going to conclude it in a moment's time. Do stay with us here on Premier Christian Radio, Unbelievable, broadcasting this Saturday afternoon and online at premier.org.uk/unbelievable.
This one's for the freaks, for
Well, just a snippet there of the Manic Street Preachers, Underdogs. You've declared on this programme your fandom of the Manic Street Preachers, David. Yes. It was interesting because early on, when you first started coming on the programme, you interacted with Ed Turner, who goes by the pseudonym the Manic Street Preacher. He's an atheist, and once he discovered your own appreciation of the Manic Street Preachers, I think he took on a newfound sort of, you know, respect for you, which perhaps wasn't there before. It's interesting how music can break down some boundaries sometimes, isn't it?
It's the power of music. Again, I just like the Manic Street. First of all, the name. I got a T-shirt and crossed out S on the Preachers. I am manic. I am a street preacher. So it worked for me. Secondly, their story, and but most of all, the music and the questions, because this, again, is probably a whole new programme, but I think music can be quite subversive in a good way. And that song that we just heard, this one's for the freaks, they're so beautiful, you know, for the downtrodden, sorry, and the oppressed and so on. I think that kind of angry music, strangely, when we're talking about beauty, is beauty. It's back to our thing about ugliness and beauty. These guys are singing about the ugliness that really is in the world. And I don't think the Manics offer any kind of solution, which probably makes their music for me more real. They don't know. I'm suggesting, again, they're asking questions, which would again point to Christ. But maybe Gordon was want to go back to the drugs.
I mean, I think you wanted to sort of, as we're coming towards the end of the programme, sort of pick on something David said earlier.
Indeed, yeah. David was talking about his friend who was in prison and who had an experience of joy, or maybe several experiences of joy, and then had to be tested for drugs because presumably the prison guards didn't think that somebody could be on that sort of a high without sort of chemical assistance. My thought is that with regard to that, music can do, although probably not to quite such a sort of dangerously deep degree, but music can do that sort of thing. It can transport me, and I don't claim to be unique in that. I should think for probably most people, when they find the right piece of music and the right frame of mind, and they put the two together, they can be transported somewhere absolutely divine, to sort of use the word with a small d. Maybe I think that people who are growing up in the situation where they might consider themselves or have other people consider them underdogs, maybe they would be looking for things of beauty and things of sort of transportation, and they possibly can't find it in music because they haven't the experience. They find it in chemicals instead.
I mean, I've got a friend who says, when I listen to Beethoven, I'm a Christian, and things like that. Or when I listen to U2 is another one that I've heard someone say, you know, I can be a Christian when I listen to U2. This is coming from an atheist. I mean, I love U2, and there's a song on No Line on the Horizon which just sends me into orbit almost, you know. It's the song Magnificent, and it would do that even if I wasn't a Christian, I think, because there's something about the music. But because I, in a strange way, because I know that they're actually singing about ultimate joy at themselves, or Bono is at least, it's somehow, and I know myself, I believe in a source of ultimate joy. It kind of makes sense of what I'm feeling, if you like. It kind of resolves this sort of, why am I feeling like this? And it does sort of somehow give meaning. Because David's original contention, Gordon, was that ultimately your feeling, if it is just a feeling, is meaningless. It doesn't actually point to anything other than this is a feeling. You'll have it, then it will go away, might come back again another time. I mean, is that a problem for you, that music kind of doesn't have in that sense a kind of ultimate kind of meaning?
It's the sort of thing where I would actually sort of start off by disputing the premise. It's not pointless and it's not meaningless. I experience the music and it gives me various different emotions, usually very positive emotions like joy. And it's not meaningless and it's not pointless because I am, you know, it makes me feel very alive. It makes me know that I'm here for whatever reason. And I love it. And I'm experiencing very positive things from it, both when I play it and when I listen to it, because sometimes there's no greater feeling than being on stage doing a gig. That's an amazing feeling as well. Sometimes, I mean, I've played Duff gigs as well, believe me. But when the gig is going really well, this is, you know, it's what I was here for me personally. You know, other people feel driven to be, I don't know what, dancers or doctors or whatever, but for me, I'm driven to be a musician. And these sensations that I feel are not meaningless and they're not pointless. I don't attribute them to God, but I'm very, very grateful for the fact that they are there, because in one sense it's my drug.
Yes. Yeah, and I think the point that you're making about drugs is absolutely correct. You know, we tend to get wound up about, why do people take drugs? Well, as soon as I leave here, I'm heading for Starbucks or somewhere and I'm getting a double espresso and so on. Coffee makes me feel good. And I know that's a physical thing. And yeah, of course it's some kind of drug. You can see how that works. I think music can operate in the same way. And I don't necessarily, in fact, I wouldn't condemn it because of that. However, I do think it is meaningless, because at that point you're listening to that music, or at that point you're on the stage. That is great, but it stops, it ends. And my point is that actually from a Christian perspective, it's back to this eternal life stroke eternal joy. There is life. People have life and enjoy life. But it's saying there is something way more, much more than you realized. You've had glimpses of joy, glimpses. There's something much deeper and way beyond. And that's going back to where we came in with this program, where I think beauty points us to it. Music points us to it. It points us to a deeper joy, something that's far beyond what we know. There's more to life than the Weather Girls. That's what I'm trying to say.
Gordon, thank you for being with me on the programme. David, too. It's
pleasure.
Been a really interesting interaction today, quite different to the normal sort of purely intellectual, cerebral stuff, bringing in the music, which sort of obviously takes us in all kinds of directions. All the best with the drumming and the music producing, Gordon. And I understand if people want to find out more about you, you're happy for me to pass on your email address to them for the purposes of music production and that kind of thing, if there are any budding artists out there.
Absolutely correct. I'd be delighted to hear from anybody and have a good chat with them.
I'm sure you'll come back again at some point in the future as well. Thank you as well, David. I hope you enjoyed listening to this week's Classic Replay. You can find links to our newsletter, our YouTube channel, ways to give, and much more besides, and our archive of past shows at premierchristianradio.com/unbelievable. See you next time.